Where do I put this fire? This bright red feeling. This tiger lily down my mouth. He wants to grow to 20 feet tall. I've left Bethlehem and I feel free. I've left the girl I was supposed to be. Someday I'll be born. I'm so tired of being shy. I'm not that girl anymore. I'm not that straight A anymore. Now I wanna sit my legs wide open and laugh so loud that the whole damn restaurant will turn and look at me. Look at the tiger jumping out of her.
Rollin', rollin', rollin'. Big wheels keep on rollin'. Wheel in the sky keeps on turnin'. The stories in today's show all have wheels. We have bikes and cars and motorcycles and roller skates and toy cars. From KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, this is Yin Radio with women's voices and women's stories. And the topic today is Hot Wheels. With the price of gas being what it's been all summer, let's start out our Hot Wheels show with bicycles. Installment number one comes from a women's bike repair clinic.
How do you know when your car needs repair? The first sign is, usually, a noise. You go to the mechanic and say, "It makes this horrible squealing noise when I start it." Or, "It goes clonk, 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 clonk when I slow down." Yeah, it sounds like it's coming from the right front, I guess. I don't know. The engine? I don't know. Well, it's not so different with bikes. I learned this at a recent bike repair clinic where Liz Badgent was teaching a group of some 10 women how to identify and fix our bike problems. Or better yet, to prevent problems by maintaining the bike in the first place. A lot of the problems, or warning signs, are audible. Not all, but many are. Let's start with a chain. Oh, and I should let you know that Liz teaches bike clinics in Ghana, Africa, as well as in and around Moscow, Idaho. So some of her descriptions are, well, unusual to us.
What do you guys think is the major way that you know that your chain needs oil? There's something that it does.
Rust.
Rust, that's a start. Yeah, there we go. When your chain is talking to you or kissing you, that these are all Ghana things. When it's making the kissy kissy sound, that means that you've gone beyond, you know. You need and then you go. That's how we demonstrate it, and everyone laughs at you, and it's fun. So you'll hear people riding around town going, and they obviously need to oil their chain. Sometimes it will make sounds like that, and it won't look rusty. But if it's making a sound like that, then you should absolutely put some oil on it. Otherwise, if it's very rusty, I would put some oil on it. But otherwise, I would wait for it to start to make a little noise. And usually, it'll make like a little tiny noise. And if you're in tune with your bicycle, you'll notice. I think often people oil their chains too much, and then it attracts dust, and then it gets dirty. And so the dust is just as damaging to your chain because it puts little grits in it as the squeaky sound. So you might as well just wait for the squeaky sound.
Could these sound descriptions be cultural? Perhaps Americans wouldn't call it a kissy kissy noise. To figure out just what this kissy kissy noise sounds like and what it doesn't sound like, Liz checked in with the clinic participants who are analyzing their own bike chains.
How is your chain?
Oh, I don't know.
Is it quiet?
No, I don't think so.
Well, it's not making a squeaking sound. I think your derailleur is making a little noise, but yeah, it's not making the kissy kissy sound, as they say. This is a great
bike.
I'm not
sure what the kissy kissy sound is.
It's like when you hear some guy riding along and his bike's going, it's squeaking, just squeaking.
You want to look at my hear the noise, but I don't know if it's the kissy sound.
Oh no, the kissy kissy phrase is not illuminating anything for people.
See, you can hear it.
The clicking sound, that is not the kissy kissy sound. I think it's your derailleur. It's a pretty normal sound. It doesn't even seem like a shifting sound. Some people, some bicycles have a little like ticky-ticky device. I know all the big terms here. That make a sound. Usually you hear it when you go backward. You hear that? That's a totally normal sound.
Okay, so the group didn't find any bad noises, just heard the good, normal ones.
Yeah, I think it's fine.
But in examining the chains, Liz found an opportunity to illustrate a cleaning job.
And how are you?
Fine. Mine makes the same kind of clicking sound, but not as intense.
I think you could stand to clean it.
Yeah.
See how? Yeah. So I would hit it with a toothbrush, with the you know, the wire brush thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think they're using it down here. It's dirty. Okay. This is my favorite thing. We'll use it as a demonstration.
Okay.
It's my favorite thing to clean. You see all that crap. Is that what you're pointing out?
Yeah.
This cleaning job led to some great sounds, sounds of amazement and satisfaction. What happens is that gunk, mostly dirt and dust trapped in chain oil and road grease, gets built up on the sprockets of the derailleur. It's where the grease comes off the chain and builds up on the derailleur.
I have a good example of another dirty thing that your chain hangs out with. So she has a lot of grime on her derailleur. Can you guys see how there's like all this sticky black stuff?
Yes.
Yeah. It's not gonna ruin your bike, but it's just a sign that she's been riding it. It's been getting dirty. And this is one of my favorite things to clean off because it's very satisfying. You can use a screwdriver and find the right angle. Ah. Yeah. It makes you feel like you've really done something nice for your bike. So maybe someone else wants to do the other one, do the honors.
Cleaning it is simple.
Yeah, you kind of have to get the screwdriver at the right angle.
Okay.
Yeah. Is it coming?
I think so.
Yeah.
Once you figure out the details, once you get the right angle.
Maybe you could use a wipe. This one is okay. Maybe if you try angling it.
Liz is turning the pedals, moving the sprockets past the flat edge of the screwdriver.
It's not as easy as it looks, but
when the angle, contact, and speed are right.
Just a little.
Ooh. Yeah, oh, there you go. Yeah.
It just peels back.
Yeah, isn't it great?
It's so interesting.
Yeah. So, thank you.
Do you want to try this? It's your bike.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's all you do. Is just do this.
Yeah, just until it's clean, you know, to get those chunks off. Yeah.
Wow.
That's
pretty cool. Where am I supposed to put it again?
In the line of the dirt. Yeah. I'm glad you guys are enjoying this one because I'm like...
I mean, it's so instantly gratifying.
Exactly. You get to see results immediately.
I can do it again. Or like popping a big zip.
Exactly.
That kind of satisfaction.
Yeah.
That's not...
Yeah, there you go.
Wow.
These oohs and ahs indicate that everything is working well in the cleaning department. There are other sounds that aren't so good, like when there's a squeaky noise in the pedals. That's what they call the engine in Ghana. It could well mean that the ball bearings are wearing out or grinding or need repacking. Another sound we don't like is the hiss of air leaving a tire. except in the case of making repairs. When you've already got a flat, that sound can help you find and patch the hole. It's really a simple technique. You take the tire and the tube off the rim and inflate the tube, not so much as to blow it up, but so that the leak will reveal itself. Examine the tube, feeling and listening for the air leak.
Now, just try going along, feeling with your hands, listening.
Oh, this should have that big of a hole.
Yeah, it's not holding air at all, huh?
There it goes.
Oh, look, it's a big split right there.
Oh, okay, that's
one more. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
So there's lots of sounds that tell you about your bike's health. You have to get in tune with it, learn what's normal. Then you can hear what's abnormal. You can then take the bike to the shop and tell them, my bike's making a noise kind of like all the time, or when I pedal. Can you fix it? And if you've been to a bike clinic, you can just fix it yourself. How can we resist a little Queen when we're talking about bicycles? We're going to have another musical break. This is a song called Bicycle by Botany Bay. Thank you.
That's Bicycle by Botany Bay. Our theme is Hot Wheels, and we're at installment number 2. Karen Raffo went around town and asked people, what do you name your car? You're going to see a couple of themes emerge in this one.
What is the name of your car?
POS. POS 8.0. POS 8.0.
Why?
Because it's a piece of crap, but it runs well. It's not pretty to look at, but it runs well.
Oh, I think I drove Hal to the hospital in it.
Yeah. Good times. What? Hal cut his finger. This is good, actually. Hal cut his finger demonstrating how to cut onions. And all he was doing, he was talking to Jared while he was cutting, and then he lops off, like, the end of his finger. Yeah, like, no, like, a good chunk of it. While he's demonstrating. And so the rest of the night, is like, so is that how you cut onions? You gotta lose a part of your finger?
So you're supposed to cut your fingers off.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Yeah,
I quit.
Do you name your car?
Do I name my car? It would change with how I feel about it from day to day.
How do you feel about it today?
I feel that it's covered in snow and I can't even see it. That's how I feel about it today. It's a snow pile.
Is that its name?
Yeah, that's the name for now, for the winner.
My car's name is Carlos. For short, it's Car.
That's awesome. It's my first car. It was a 94 red Chevy Cavalier coupe convertible. Thank you very much. Yeah, I looked pretty sexy driving that thing around when I was 15. Anyway. After a little while, every time I would brake, it would...
Hey! How are you?
Good, how are you doing?
Good. I heard your voice.
Okay. Where did I stop? I was sexy. That's right, okay. 15. And so I'd drive, and after a while, not very long after I'd had this car either, anytime I would put the brakes on, the entire car would die. So I would be at a light, braking at a red light, and my car would die. Doesn't restart, nothing. I'm just sitting there, people are passing by, flipping me off, yelling profane things that might not have no control over it. Anyway, so it kept happening and happening and happening, and I would have to leave my car wherever it was or have it towed because it wouldn't start until like the next day. It was really awkward and weird. So I was like, you know what? I don't know. I took it in to try to get it fixed. Nobody knew what was going on with it. Everybody had theories, and I spent all this money trying to figure it out. I had no idea. So I was like, all right, I just need to sell this car. So I went to drive it to this CarMax place that, like, buys cars, you know? On the way there, it dies at a light. So my boyfriend at the time has to push me through this, like, huge, long intersection. This is in a huge city. So push me through this intersection with his truck while I'm trying to steer. We have to park it. It's, like, 4 blocks away from the CarMax place. Park it, wait till the next day to go back and start it. Take it to CarMax. They test drive it. They're like, this is a great car. Here's $2,000. Yeah. But on the way there, I was driving. I was like, oh, I'm going to miss this car. It's my first car. It's a convertible. And then it dies. And I said, and that's where the name came from.
I don't have a personal name for my car.
You don't?
I don't.
Blue
piece of and that's what it is right about now.
Why?
Because it's hardly working.
The name of my car is Blue.
Why?
Well, because Blue is my mom's car. And she's big and blue, and her
Your
name
mom is?
No, not my mom. No, her car is big and blue. It's kind of like a land yacht, but it's blue. Blue kicks ass.
My car doesn't have a name.
Worthless piece of crap.
I've heard a lot of people say that.
My car is stuck over at the Creighton's parking lot because it won't start. I had to call Ben over from the bars to meet me and my dad there to help us push it into Creighton's parking lot. Because it stalled and stopped right in the middle of Jackson, the three-way. Yeah, I've taken it to a shop 3 times. They have no idea what's wrong with it, because every time they try to work it, it runs perfectly.
So you should take it to them to try to sell it.
No, every time I drive away, they're just like, stops working the next day.
I thought they quit smoking anyway.
That sucks. You need a car.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, yeah. My car's real name is Old Bluey.
What? What is it?
Old Bluey?
Old Bluey?
Yeah, Bluey.
Are you kidding me? Because if you're Old Bluey, she's Big Blue, and she's Blueberry.
It's because they're all colored blue.
I am not kidding.
No, that's why my mom always called her. I got her.
Why?
Because it's old and it's blue.
What is the name of your car? A Commander.
That's your name for it?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't have a name for it yet. It's new. Oh, so it's not Commander? It is a Commander, but I don't have, it's like, not like Bessie or anything. It is my Commander. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. What's that?
Cobra Commander?
No.
Secret Ops Cobra Commander.
That'd be good. I'm not that creative.
What? Just call it Bill.
Bill? No, that's too much of a Clinton thing.
Too much of a Clinton.
Yeah. I'll figure that out. Does your car have a name?
Yes.
What is your car's name?
Carlos.
Nice. I did have a car in high school named the Demon.
No, I drive a Ford Fairlane 500.
1963, baby. Well, my real car is a Ford Fairlane 500.
That's not good.
Why?
It's in Boise because it won't make it out to Moscow. What is the name of your car?
Like the model? Or like what I call it?
What you call it?
The toilet.
The toilet?
The toilet.
Why?
Because it's a piece of junk. It's a toilet. And that's what my sister calls it, too, is the toilet.
How long have you been calling it that?
Since I've owned it.
Really?
It doesn't cross my mind.
6 years? 7 years?
In some Queen to illustrate our theme of Hot Wheels. Installment number 3, the hottest thing on wheels isn't a Lamborghini or a Jaguar, nor is it a Harley or a Beamer. It's a woman, or better yet, it's many women, crashing into each other. In this next installment of our Hot Wheels show, we're going to go to the roller rink for some good old-fashioned 4 wheels per foot roller derby. Combine hockey-style speeds and brawls with fishnet stockings and lots of flash, and you get roller derby. The Lilac City Roller Girls play up both sides of the game, tough and hot. They bash each other with blocking that they admit may or may not be legal. Their protective gear covers the basics, head, elbows, and knees. And the rest is available for decorating with tattoos, stockings, mini skirts, fitted tops, and makeup. Lots of makeup. Some go for a sexy look with the makeup. Others aim to intimidate with painted-on scars and cuts or skeleton faces. Beauty and the Beast, all in one. You get the idea as soon as you meet a roller girl on the rink ready for action.
Hey, I'm talking to Mary Widow here. Nice to meet you, Mary.
Nice to meet you. Thanks for being here.
Tell me about what's up tonight. Have you had a bout with these women before?
We have not bouted against the Rainy City Roller Dolls before. This is their first bout and our first bout with them. So we're hoping to make it an exciting night.
Are you planning to teach them any lessons?
I'm planning on teaching them many, many, many lessons. Hard lessons to learn.
Tell me, I've never seen roller derby before. What should I expect?
You should expect some amazing shows of speed and agility and hard hits. And it's a lot to take in at first, but you will become a derby fan by the end of the night. I've never seen anyone leave this place not having had a good time.
Tell me, what's your objective?
My objective tonight is to bring the pain.
Tough talk is part of the game, and it starts with the name. Merry Widow, Brawly Hatchet, Brat and a Half, Baby Snakes, Sweet Tart, Sparkillicious, Crazy Train, and Ida B. Choaz. These are just some of the Lilac City Roller Girls. The Rainy City Roller Dolls, who are out of Centralia, Washington, include the likes of Napalm Beth, Suicide Red, Holly Hobbler, and Miss Mel Mangles. It's hard to underestimate the value of a good skate name. Brat and a Half explains.
You know, it's your name, so in your number, and it retires with you. No one else in the league anywhere in the United States can have the same name as you. So that's what keeps it cool. And, you know, and most people, you know, a lot of these people, I only know them by their skate names, and we refer to each other like that. I mean, I'm Brat and a Half, but they're all, hey, Brat, you know. And my name came from my nanny when I was a kid. I was such an awful person, a little brat, that she called me, you are a brat and a half. And so I thought when I started derby, and I still am, that it fits. So, and everyone, you know, kind of picks their own thing and has their own story of why, but... That's yeah, it is important to have your name, because Ida Beachoass, that's exactly what she does. So if you have a name like that and then you can't serve it up, it's no point. They'll make fun of you, but, you know, tough name, tough girl, it all goes together.
For many derby girls, the name is related to a persona, an alter ego, who can be let loose on the track. That's the case for Merry Widow.
I often talk about the Clark Kent Superman dynamic. You know, by day, we're all Clark Kent. We all have very interesting lives. We're all from different walks of life. By night, we all come here, we're all Superman. So, Merry Widow is very different from Kelly Garland. And Kelly Garland probably can't stand Merry Widow.
Is she your alter ego, though?
She is. I'm trying to decide who's the alter ego, though. It's very hard to tell sometimes.
Yeah. And how did you choose your name?
Would you ask Superman how he chose his name? Some secrets are best kept.
Fair enough.
It's no secret that these girls come to play, and to play hard. The Lilac City Roller Girls serve it up. Before the bout, they're out working the crowd, warming up and showing off. But they're saving the real tough stuff for the bout, not wasting it too much on trash talk. Again, here's Brat and a Half.
Yep. And what do you expect tonight?
You know, I've never played these people, and I'm not nervous, so that makes me nervous. And other than that, you know, I've been working on some new stuff, went to a camp, so I want to kind of use what I've learned, so I'm excited to get to do that. And other than that, I just want to have fun, because that is why we're really here, I think.
Having fun, sure, but I was kind of expecting actually a lot of, we're going to take them down kind of talk. Do we talk that way here?
You know, we do sometimes, but usually it's more like a lot of us just kind of, there's not a lot of show. It's kind of more like we serve it up out there. I don't know if it's because we're women. We want to hide what we have, the aggression, and, you know, not let it all out there at once. But, yeah, we've talked about that we need to get all rah, 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 like, you know, like motor, you know, like the football teams and stuff. But we just don't. We talk about how we feel and that we're nervous or that we're excited or, you know, and so, yeah. But, no, usually once we get out there and you get hit hard, it takes all of the glee and smiles out of your face, and then you want to take them out. You want to serve it up. You want to get some retribution. That's what I wait for, is that first little pop to my neck, and then I'm mad.
Roller derby started in the 1920s as roller skate races. By the 1930s, physical contact was introduced, maybe even emphasized in the sport. And it went through boom and bust cycles from then until the 1970s, when the professional gladiator-style competitions that had been on television went under, apparently forever. Since then, roller derby has been a do-it-yourself sport, with teams all over the country and support from families and friends. Husbands announce, referees set up and help prepare. Kids, parents, brothers and sisters lend a hand and lend voice to the crowd. It's been an all-woman thing since... Well, who knows? There have been some men's teams, and some mixed teams, but through most of its history, roller derby has been a girl thing.
Well, what up, Lilac City Roller Girls fans? You guys ready to rock?
We're grassroots. We do everything on our own from the ground up, so we're all building this organization together. We are made up of a huge group of people in our community, men, women, even children. We include the families in our stuff. We've got men volunteering for us, but it is a female-run organization, so it's wonderfully empowering in that respect.
How about it, Spokane? Are you guys ready for the Lilac City Rollers?
Sweet Tart says there's a couple of logical reasons for that.
Only women can do it because it's true multitasking.
And that's a good question. Why women? Why don't we see roller derby for guys? What is it that we got that they haven't got?
We look way better in miniskirts and fishnet tights.
Okay. The rules go like this. Each team has three blockers and one lead woman called a pivot. These women, four from each team, stick together in a practically impassable pack as they cruise around the skate floor. And each team has a point scorer. She's the jammer. Jammers start at the back behind the pack, and they try to bust through, get through that pack. For each person on the other team that the jammer gets past, she scores a point. Sweet Thunder is a jammer.
I'm primarily a jammer, but I'm good at blocking too, but they like to play me as jammer because I'm fast.
You are.
So then I, you know, can move around without getting hit.
You can tell who the jammer is by the star on her helmet. And while the jammer is jamming through that pack, the blockers are trying to help their own jammer through while stopping the opponent's jammer. A blocker by the name of S. Terminator describes some of the techniques.
Yeah, you know, I'm not a jammer, so my whole thing is like knocking down women as best I can, especially the ones with stars on their helmets. That's even better.
Rules and techniques are real, but part of the game seems to be knowing when to break them and take a time out on the penalty sofa.
There are a lot of intricacies to how we can and cannot block, so.
And are you trying to get people, push them out of bounds? Are you trying to just knock them down?
We're trying to keep them from getting through that pack any way we can. Out of bounds, on the ground, we don't care. We don't want them getting past us.
Are there rules?
There are lots of rules. Some of us, including me, end up breaking them, which is why we have our lovely penalty couch.
Let's get ready.
Before the bout began, the crowd was encouraged to come sit right up to the edge of the tape with a warning or a promise.
If you want to be right on the action, come sit right up to the caution tape, which is 10 feet out of bounds. You probably will get a roller girl on your lap.
Now, it took a while before that actually happened. There were lots of crashes, falls, pushes, and pulls. Then it happened. That was a highlight for some fans.
So what do you think?
It was nice. I really liked being when they crashed into me. That was hot.
Did you catch any? How many girls did you catch?
I caught two.
Did you keep them?
No,
was
I never
catch
keep
and release?
Girls. Yeah, it was catch and release.
For all the hard hitting, though, there are really very few accidents. Lots of bruises, but not much more. Brat and a Half explains that while it's all real, they do all practice to avoid injury.
Well, it's real. We can't fake anything. You know, the falls and everything, it's so real that, you know, and we fall at practice. We check each other into the wall at practice. It's the only way to do derby is full contact all the time. It's the only way you can really do it. And I think that's what's awesome about it is that there's no, you know, no pulling any kind of punches at all, practice or out there. So it's
well, I also see you're not wearing all that much in the way of protective gear, so take a lot, don't you?
We wear wrist, elbow, knee, mouth guards, and helmets. So, and with that, you know, we pretty well don't have too many injuries. Usually the injuries that we have are when people first start because they don't fall right. We practice falling so that when we go down, we're going on our pads or certain things. So, you know, there are those things that happen. I got whiplash at one just because I went down so hard. But, you know, and you can't practice for that other than, you know, falling correctly most of the time.
Swings under the roll of swing. Space away around turn four. Comes in the straightaway. One, two. Tuning out the back. Trying to make her way through a hole. Makes it on the outside of the front half. Crazy chain there with the whip. She's trying to make her way through.
The fans. Roller derby regulars. First time out. Old, young. They're really into it.
What's your favorite part of roller derby?
I like it when the girls take each other out.
I think my favorite part is probably the fights, but we haven't seen one yet.
It will happen.
You gotta love the chicks taking each other out.
What's your favorite part of roller derby?
What's your favorite part of roller derby?
Girls' butts.
Sexy is just part of the fan attraction.
Because a lot of them fear us, as well they should. You know, we're very respected by our fans, and we've got an amazing wide demographic of people that come because they love the sport. We get, you know, young and old, men and women, kids, families. It's all of the walks of life. So
and great. You happen to be hot, too, but that's beside
you
the point.
That's just an added bonus. You can thank my mama for that.
Fear, respect, and plain old love, too. The youngest fans at the rink were daughters of roller girls, and clearly they emulate their moms.
What's your favorite part?
Cheerleading.
Yeah, you do a good job? Real loud? Can you give me an example? Let me hear you cheer.
Okay. Yay! Yeah.
I like your outfits. Where'd you get it?
My mom just made it.
Where'd you get your crown?
From Sam.
It is a good crown. Are you a roller princess?
No. I'm a roller princess.
Six, five, four, three, two, one.
Competition was good, but the Lilac City Roller Girls stomped the Rainy City Roller Dolls that day. Final score, 121-86. Fans congratulated the Roller Girls, who made themselves available immediately after the event. They said that the Rainy City team was tougher than they expected, being so new to the game, and they had to be careful not to underestimate them. Brat and a Half gave a rundown of the bout.
I am always so happy. I am a poor sport, so when I lose, I pout and sulk, and yeah, no, I love to win, and yeah, it's all a blur now. I have to watch the video to even know what happened.
Well, do you feel like, you said you wanted to do some things you've learned recently. Do you feel like you're able to do that?
Yeah, we've really been working on our pack, like us working together in the pack, and we were doing tons of assists. You know, if you saw us, we were doing whips, we were pushing each other, we were doing combinations of whipping and pushing, we were pushing our other blockers into their blocker or their jammer, which, you know, instead of us being able to catch it, we fling another girl at it, and that's all stuff we've been working on. So yeah, we really, really did it, and I think it made a huge difference and are able to get that point lead and not let them get it back on us.
The women who make up the Lilac City Roller Girls aren't what you expect. They're all shapes and sizes. They're students, artists, preschool directors, organic food store workers, designers. They garden. They're moms. They're tough. They're sexy. They're fast.
You know, we have girls ranging from 18 to 45 years old. Yeah. So it's wonderful. And you'd never know the difference between any of them.
Except for the older ones might be tougher.
They are. They're a little rough around the edges. Being moms and grandmas really make you a little tougher.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
I really enjoyed it.
It was a pleasure, and please just come back anytime.
They say that once you've experienced roller derby, you're a fan for life. I know I'm going back. The Lilac City Roller Girls' next bout is Saturday, October 11th at the Spokane Convention Center. You can find them on the web, they have a MySpace page, or follow the link to their page at yinradio.org. Yin Radio, featuring women's voices and women's stories. This week's theme is Hot Wheels. Okay, we've done bikes and cars and roller skates. How about a motorcycle? Installment number 4 is called I Did It by Motorcycle. Beth Whitman travels by herself, all the time. She's managed to turn her love of traveling into her life, not just her hobby. She's been to India, Bhutan, Thailand, Cambodia, France. Primitive places, developed places, big cities and small villages. She slept in hostels and on people's couches, as well as in hotels and inns and lodges. With all that experience, you might think that the travel starts to blend together. But that's not so. Some trips really stand out.
One of my big travel experiences was in 97. I rode a motorcycle solo from Seattle to Panama. It was a BMW F650, and it was 9 weeks and 7,000 miles. And that was the trip where people told me I would die, I'd be raped, thrown in jail, I'd be left by the side of the road, someone would steal my motorcycle, et cetera, et cetera. My brother wanted me to take a gun with me, which for anyone who knows me is just crazy. And people hugged me thinking that they would never see me again. They really believed that.
With that kind of encouragement, it's hard to move forward with your plans. But Beth did. After all, she's been traveling solo around the world for almost 20 years by then. Beth Whitman is the author of the Wanderlust and Lipstick series of books, Guides for Women Traveling Solo. She encourages people to follow their travel dreams. She didn't let fear or other people's fears stop her.
I just knew in my heart that if I had a good outlook and I became friends with the folks, you know, a really great piece of advice is, especially at border crossings and any kind of situation where somebody else holds the power, become their friend, become their sister, their mother, you know, their daughter, however you want to work that, become their friend, and that'll generally get you through the situation. And I had very few problems on that motorcycle trip.
Friendships seem to develop when you're on the road, and they blossom when troubles arise. Beth's first problem occurred before she even left the States, and people showed their true colors.
I did have a flat tire in New Mexico, and just people came out of the woodwork to help me out and just were over the top friendly and helpful, you know, and here's a gal in distress, you know, on this motorcycle, and everyone was just great about that. And then I had, you know, I had the Nicaraguan police, you know, kind of winking and, you know, wanting regalos, stopping me on this highway, and they're saying regalos, regalos, and my Spanish was really bad at that time, and I just kept saying no understand, you know, no entiendo, and I later, you know, my legs are shaking then, thinking what the heck did they want? And they wanted gifts, and I don't think that they wanted anything out of my backpack gift, you know, they wanted me, but that was, you know, that was the most extreme, uncomfortable situation, you know, that happened.
Beth has specific advice for dealing with unwanted advances. It happens in many countries, not the least of which is the U.S., where streets and schools and workplaces are full of unwanted advances. It's no different around the world, and the way to handle them are not really different. People are people, it seems. Like any big undertaking, Beth followed a time-proven approach. Dream it, plan it, find support for it, do it.
I dreamt it, you know, I had this vision, got support from BMW. They loaned me the motorcycle and provided me, like, just completely outfitted me with gear and everything. And they were just great sponsors. But just, I did it, you know, and I lived to tell about it.
It takes guts to step outside your comfort zone, whether it's to go to school, learn a new skill, visit a prison, travel by motorcycle through Central America, or take a plane ride. If it's big to you, it can be scary and hard. But the result is big, too.
The word is empowering, because you can finish something up and you can say, yeah, I did that on my own. Now, I will also tell you that I can equate that same feeling of empowerment when I'm working on my computer and I've got, like, some problem. I'm trying to figure out how to edit audio that I've never done before. And this is, like, a recent thing for me that just in the last couple of weeks I figured out, I've been doing interviews, and I finally figured out how to edit the audio myself. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did this. I feel so great. And it might have taken me a couple of hours to figure it out, but it's that same feeling of accomplishment that I figured it out, that I went online, I Googled instructions, I figured out the software, I downloaded it and just worked it out all myself, and I didn't have to pay someone else to do it, and I didn't have to go sit in front of a computer with somebody else to have them teach me. I figured it out on my own, and it's a very similar feeling of, like, yeah, I did that on my own. And usually because I say that it doesn't happen during all of my travels, it usually happens when it's an experience that's a little bit more challenging, or something happens that is a challenge. You know, I've like the getting a flat tire on the motorcycle, or I was down in Guatemala and my friend was flying in to meet me and she never got off the plane, and I'm crying, thinking, what am I going to do? How am I going to ever connect with Marcia? Because, you know, she didn't get off the plane, and somebody loans me a phone to make phone calls. You know, people will come out and help you out, and then it's like, wow, I got through that.
Knowing you can do it isn't about doing it alone. It's about knowing that it's going to work out, that you can maneuver in the world of people, and that people will help you.
The community, whatever community it is, whether it's in your own hometown or it's somewhere else, people will just come out to help you when you need it. And that's a really empowering and relaxing feeling. You can just go with things and it all works out.
You can learn more about Beth Whitman, her travels, and her tips for your travels at her website, wanderlustandlipstick.com. Or you can visit yinradio.org for a link to her site. And you can join Beth for a trip or get one of her Wanderlust and Lipstick guides for women traveling solo. Happy travels! The last portion of today's show is a brief remembrance of a Christmas toy from long ago. On Christmas, we would get only girly toys. I remember a baby doll and a flute, a beanbag doll wrapped in yellow clothes, which I still have, and some Barbies. Once there was a bicycle. Normally, that'd be an item that you would have to earn, not be given. And once there was a gift that wasn't requested at all. Matchbook-size race car set, complete with track and cars. and it was mine. I was just about 8 years old. I grew up in a family of girl children. Daddy was surrounded by four women, Mom and their three daughters. But he loved it. My dad wasn't the toughest dude in the neighborhood. If he had felt that college was affordable, he might have become downright bookish. But he did grow up with brothers, and only brothers. I'm one of three girls, he's one of three boys. And Daddy was surrounded. But I never heard my dad say I couldn't do or be something because I was a girl. He played with us, flying kites and swimming and visiting parks and city attractions, the same as he would do with boys. Or would he? This Christmas present, this car race set, was fascinating to me and to my sisters. I had played with my friend Penny's Hot Wheels set once. I think it actually was her little brother's. We arranged the tracks, making loops and jumps. I had not seen another set until that Christmas, and it was mine. So I rushed to set up the track. As soon as presents were opened and breakfast was eaten, we were allowed to go play. By then, aunts and uncles and Granny B were starting to show up. Uncle Earl was there, Daddy's little brother. Uncle Earl had one kid, a daughter too, but later in his life, this Christmas, when I had the race car set, Uncle Earl had no kids. But the brothers, Dad and Earl, were kids themselves. This was the first that I learned of this fact. At 8 years old, I had thought that all big people in my family were grown up. I've since learned more about the ability of my family to remain kids. And I've tried to emulate them. So I go rushing off with my sister to set up the race car set. And of course, Daddy and Earl want to help. Daddy always helps. But Daddy and Earl's help, this time on this Christmas, was a little more than help. They set up the track. They showed us, here's how you can set it up. Look, here's another way you can set it up. Look how fast the cars go this way. Here, let's rearrange it and do it this way. Daddy and Earl played and played with that set. We could not get in. I remember the frustration of it all, trying to get in, trying to go play with my favorite toy. I don't remember ever playing with that race car set, but I remember Daddy and Earl playing with that set. And it makes me wonder, did he really play the same games with us as he would if he had had boys? I know he would have had the same sense of humor. I know he would have had the same playfulness. I know he would have teased just the same. I know he would have told them, like he told us, that we could be or do anything. But he might have played different games.
There's so much hate going around. It's hard to not let it get you down. But at least we could do is make a joyful sound from the man from Minneapolis, and it goes like this. Close the shop, let's take a drive, take a break from 9 to 5. It's so great to be alive, oh yeah. We could rent some roller skates, we could skate around the lake. If we don't know how, we'll fake it, oh yeah. Strolling, strolling, we could have fun just strolling. Rockin', rollin', oh yeah.
We're listening to Jamina Johnson with her tune Strollin'. For more information about this program and links to podcasts of this show and previous Yin Radio shows, you can go to yinradio.org. I'd really like to thank Liz Badgett, Karen Raffo, the Lilac City Roller Girls, and Beth Whitman for today's show. Yin Radio is produced at KRFP in Moscow, Idaho by VP Foundation. Thanks so much for joining me. Until next week.
See the man with the blue guitar. There's so much hate going round. Hard to not let it get you down. Please, we could do this, make your joyful sound. Oh yes, falling, falling. We could have